This is Reed Mathis, and you're listening to KSKQ, 89.5 FM in Ashland, 94.1 FM in Medford, and streaming online at kskq.org. And we're lucky to have Reed Mathis on the line with us today.
Hi.
Hey.
Nice to be here.
So much good stuff to talk about today.
One
of the big things that I was really drawn to was I've been listening to your other interviews, and you mentioned that you learning to play music was like learning to use a fork.
Yes, true. I mean, for sure, you know, just because everyone in my family, on both sides of my family, was a professional musician. So, you know, it wasn't until kindergarten that I realized that everyone's family wasn't making music all the time. So, you know, yeah, I mean, by that time I already kind of had a lot of the basics down, and I just didn't even think twice about it. It wasn't like a formal thing in our house. It was just like a form of recreation. So it seemed really natural. And, you know, I mean, that's one of the problems, I think, with music education these days, is that, like, the first thing you're told about music is that it's hard, and, you know, and you just immediately agree, and then you're predisposed to have a difficult time and think it's a lot of work. And, you know, the English language is hard too, but little kids learn it every day, you know, like, just because they don't know that it's hard. They just know they want to communicate, so they figure it out. But if you tell them it's hard, they're going to have twice as hard of a time learning it. I don't know. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I had the pleasure of meeting Victor Wooten and his wife, Holly. I'm sure you're familiar with Victor.
Yeah, I played with Victor.
Yeah. And he delivered a TED talk where he has kind of described something similar, where he didn't learn that he had to play a certain way. There was just a little stool sitting off to the side with a plastic bass on it that didn't even have working strings, and he knew it was for him.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't have to learn to play as little kids don't have to learn to talk. And if you say Paschetti, you know, that's cute, you know. Most people
they'll correct you, but it's not part of this massive regimen like formal music education is, you know. So I don't know. Victor, there's a book that I read back in the 90s that had a huge beneficial effect on me, and later Victor would write a book of his own that covered a lot of the same stuff. But the book I read was called Effortless Mastery, and it came out sometime in the 90s, and I heard about it from Stanton Moore, and that book is just a game changer. I highly recommend it to anybody interested in improvised music.
Love it.
Effortless Mastery. Yeah, it's just the best writing on the subject I've ever encountered, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, when I was I was 19, I met another friend that you probably have played with, Benji Parecki.
I don't know who that is.
He played with Keller Williams on the keyboards, so I figured maybe that you might have crossed over with him. But he said that music was a conversation, and at 19, that was a game changer for me, to listen to music as a conversation, not even just as a language, but as a conversation.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's two kinds of music, you know. There's the kind that's like a play, you know, like. Or a movie, you know, and then there's the kind that's like a game, and you know, the kind that's like a game, the whole point of it is that you don't know what's about to happen. I mean, how many people would like football if you knew who the winner was ahead of time? You know, it defeats the whole purpose to know what's going to happen. But you know, most people don't think of music in that way. They think of music more like a TV show or a play, where it's like, oh, first this happens and then that happens, and here's your part and here's my part, and everybody stick to your part. And, you know, and most music is intended to be experienced that way. You know, most musicians do not improvise, and there's a good reason for that. It's because improvising is super risky and it doesn't work every time. And just like playing sports is risky, even the best player doesn't win every time. you know, and like, so, but that risk is what makes it worthwhile. That risk is what gives it value and makes it more than just like, hey, everybody, look how awesome I am or something, you know, like it's, if you're having this authentic experience and you're taking real risks in front of the audience, they can feel it, or at least the more evolved among them can feel it, and it gives it more value. It gives it more weight, you know?
Exactly. I see that in comedians often. They'll take, totally. They'll take risks. I think that that's really poignant, and I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that artificial intelligence can't do, you know? And as we get more and more computery, you know, and more, there's more and more, like, apps and software for making music that basically do all the hard work for you. You know, like more and more people have, you know, self-identify as musicians because they know how to use some software that can do it for you, basically. And like, that's, there's nothing wrong with that. People, it's just another tool. It's just another instrument. But the problem is those, anything digital can't behave organically. You can program it to behave in an approximation of something organic, but even that is an approximation, and it's only designed to trick you into thinking that it's organic, you know? So you can like program something to have quote unquote flaws, but that doesn't make it organic or flawed, you know? And so like, I feel like increasingly music made with human flaws is becoming more and more precious with every passing day, because it's becoming more and more rare. You know, 99% of the people on the planet listen to music that is not, that has had all the flaws removed, you know?
Yes,
like agreed. Photoshop.
Yes.
And, you know, like I said, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's dehumanizing us as people, just like social media, you know, creates the illusion of community without all, without the messy, awkward hanging out part. And like, you know, the more we rely on that, the sicker we're going to get emotionally and socially. And, you know, I feel like there's a music version of that where hopefully we don't realize too late that music made by flawed humans taking real risks and demonstrating real bravery is of value. It's of incredible value, you know? So I mean, this is all just like, you know, for me, like this is the kind of stuff I remind myself of so I can remember what an honor it is to do what I do for a living, and that it's not about whether I come out looking cool or making money or whatever. The real reason for what I'm doing is that the culture needs people like me to do this stuff, or it'll vanish, because it's cheaper to have computers make the music. It's cheaper to have DJs. It's cheaper to, you know, the less vulnerable, the less risk is involved, the more money you can. So, you know, there's the industry is really incentivized to have robots make the music, you know?
Wow. That is incredibly profound.
We have to really decide to patronize music, flawed music made by flawed humans.
Yeah.
Or we'll lose it.
Yeah. I've sung a few nights with a band locally, and I've been called pitchy. I'm okay with that, but I took the moment and was brave enough to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And that meant a lot to me. And the personality that you bring to the stage, or the conversation that you bring to the stage, is really more important to me than a studio edited version of something that sounds perfect.
Totally.
Yeah.
Completely, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
I agree. How are you close to Cottage Grove?
We're about 2 hours away from there.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I don't know Oregon that well. I'm like, but I have friends in Cottage Grove. That's why I asked.
Oh, well, I would like to thank Hal Gill for recommending that you be my guest today. And I'm glad to hear. I was going to interview Ben Morrison this week, And he just got on the road this morning. But he said to say hey. And
I love Ben, man. He's awesome.
And we just have a small world kind of brewing around us, and we're friends who haven't met yet. But we're about 14 miles from the California border here in Ashland, Oregon.
Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Right on. Ashland. So I have some friends there too. Do you know Dave Margulies?
Yes.
And what about Josh Clark and Maddie Clark?
The names are familiar, but I don't know them personally.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I know. I felt like it was a small world. That's why I was surprised maybe you didn't know Benji, because he was with Keller. But
I mean, all my playing with Keller has been either just the two of us, or we used to play trio, me and him and Jeff Austin, while Jeff Austin was still alive. So I've never played with Keller with like his band.
Oh, gotcha. So no Grateful Gospel.
It was always just like duo or trio with Jeff Austin.
That's lovely. I bet that was even more profound, though, just to have the two or three of you.
And I love playing duos. And I mean, my first band, Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey, was a trio, and we did that for 15 years. And that's always my preferred way to play.
Well, I was asked by Hal to ask you about Electric Beethoven, because he felt that that was really an important project that I should highlight today.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Electric Beethoven is a band I put together I wish it was easy to describe. I mean, I guess the short version would be that I don't listen to much classical music, but I've always really loved Beethoven. I just loved the spirit in it. I loved how simple his writing is and how sort of working class it feels, how like he never really seemed to write from a one-up position. You know, it never sounds fancy. He never sounds like he's smarter than you. You know what I mean? Like, there's just something really just sort of salt of the earth about his songwriting. And even to call him a songwriter, you know, sometimes gets chuckles from people, but like, you know, we think like, oh, if it's a white European from 100 years ago, we call him a composer, you know, and like, we have all these terms that keep the genres apart, but you know, songwriter, same thing, you know? So I just always loved his writing, and I kind of, you know, I don't know, I'm not being super articulate with it. It's hard to explain. But I put together a group that could use his songwriting as the basis for, like, group improvisation, you know? Geez, I wish I was better at describing it. I would just say, I would recommend that people go to like Spotify or YouTube or something and check out Electric Beethoven. And you'll probably get a better idea of what we're doing from that. But it's a band that improvises and uses the songwriting of Beethoven to as sort of a map, a treasure map that we follow.
Oh, I love that. One of the first songs that my son learned to play on the piano, and one of the first songs I tried to play on the piano, was Moonlight Sonata, of course.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
And he's getting really good at it, and my son's 12, and he actually turned toward the drums, but he still loves the piano, so he doesn't...
Oh, man, well, he should check out my version of Moonlight Sonata.
I'm going to turn him on to that, you can bet you that.
Yeah, he should play along with it.
Oh, he would love that.
You know what I mean? It'd be awesome. I mean, he would probably learn a lot about improvising, actually, if he like put on our version of Moonlight Sonata and then tried to play along.
Yes. Full send. For sure. Well, and you know, you were credited as like the talking bass. Like, you're known for the talking bass, kinda like Peter Frampton was the talking guitar. You know, tell me a little more about that.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I got credited with that, but I mean, I feel, you know, I mean, any instrument you play is you're using it as a communication tool. I mean, especially if you're an improviser. You know, you're what's the sound that's coming out is either an accurate model of your true emotional state and psyche, or it's a lie designed to make people think you're cool. And, you know, I always try to have it be as real as possible, as authentic as possible. But it's hard because we all want to look cool, you know. And you want the listener to be like, wow, that guy's amazing. But usually the things that you think will impress people are not true about you, you know, as a musician, you know, and that's why you pick them. You're like, ooh, that will cover up how weak I am or afraid I am or whatever. Like, you're like, oh, I'll copy that thing that I know everybody likes. And then they'll all be like, wow, he's amazing. He sounds just like that thing we all like. And, you know, I've always tried to go the other way where it's like, well, I would rather be authentically honest in the moment on the instrument. Even if I fall on my face, even if I embarrass myself, I think there's value in just being honest and authentic. So that's probably where that, you know, where that comes from.
I think you were acclaimed on Wikipedia for that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I don't know if you've looked up your wiki lately, but it's pretty impressive.
Oh, wow. The last time I looked at my Wikipedia, I was, like, frustrated by it. It's been a while.
Well.
But it's just, it's always weird when you see somebody else's version of what you do. I mean, I even, like, you know, I read articles that were based on interviews I gave sometimes, and I'm like, that's not... I don't know. I'm just always amazed at how different my concept of what I'm doing is from what it looks like to other people. But that can't be helped. That can't be helped.
No, everybody's perspective is going to be different. I read an article recently that was about my dad, who's an artist in Baltimore. And the article used the word was a lot. And I'm like, he's still alive.
Right, exactly.
And I'm thinking, oh, man.
I've seen it. I often see stuff like Reed Mathis best known for X, and it'll be something I did like once a long time ago that I wasn't even interested in. So you know what I mean? Like it'll just be like, wow, okay.
How does that come across to that person that way?
Sure.
Well, and you play multiple instruments. I don't know how long you have to talk with me, but I'll keep it as brief as we can because I heard you're going in and out of studio recording. I noticed that you play the cello, the sitar, the violin. Is that correct?
I'm okay piano. At those. There was a time in my life when I was real good at those, but that's a long time ago at this point. Right. These days, I mainly play guitar and bass, and, you know, my voice. Voice is the original instrument, you know, for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, everything the other instruments do is an attempt to sound like our voice and other things in nature. So, you know, the voice is really important. I'm actually really stoked that in the last 10 years, I've gone from a mostly instrumental musician to a mostly singing musician.
Ooh, nice.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah. No, I could see that. Well, I just picked up the ukulele last year and... I'm not really much of a musician per se, but I absolutely adore being on the radio, and that seems to be where my gift is to have my voice and my ability to interview people. And
well, and you know, there's an amazing thing about just listening to music. The parts of your brain that light up when you're playing music are the same parts of the brain that light up when you're really, really listening. Like when you're listening with your whole self, at that point, every listener is doing the same thing the musicians are doing. It's still, that same thing doesn't happen if you're like watching basketball or something. Your body doesn't go through all the states of somebody playing basketball. But if you're really, really listening to some music, your brain and your nervous system go through almost the same thing that the players are going through. So in that, if you look at it like that, then listening to music is a talent. You know, I mean, not everybody can listen to music and have a meaningful experience, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I've seen thousands of concerts from the Grateful Dead to, you know, the Grisman to Jerry Garcia Band. I actually got to see Zero play with Martin.
He was one of my first mentors.
Way back in the day at the Arbutus Town Hall. And
nice.
Part of the reason why I was introduced to you was through the mention of those shows with Ciro and a friend of mine, Tom Wardell, who put a note on my car that said, "Hey, you got great Grateful Dead stickers. You want to trade tapes?" So,
oh, cool.
Next thing you know, I'm getting, you know, invited to all kinds of things. That's how I met Victor Wooten, too, at an All Good festival in Baltimore.
Yeah. Oh, man. God bless Deadheads.
I know, right? The kindness.
What a beautiful community.
The kindness is very, very present. And
the kindness. Everybody's so welcome and invited and included. It's really a beautiful thing. God, yeah. I feel so fortunate to be adjacent to it / part of it.
Yeah, and you've played with several members of the Grateful Dead at this point. You're part of Rhythm Devils and Billy and the Kids and all kinds of stuff. Go on with that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I wasn't really in Rhythm Devils. I think I did tour with them, but I was in the Mickey Hart Band for a while, and I was in Seven Walkers with Kreutzmann a long time ago. And then, yeah, we've been doing Billy and the Kids for 7 years. This point, which is crazy.
Wow.
And we just did my first gigs after like not playing for a year was playing 3 nights in Hawaii with Kreutzmann and Billy Strings, and then a month ago we did 2 nights at Red Rocks with that same band, and it was unbelievable.
Oh, and the rainbows. You always get a rainbow at Red Rocks.
There were rainbows. Oh, my God. Which I could not see from the stage. I saw them later.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was just beautiful. Billy Strings is so beautiful, man. I love that dude.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to play some of their music around your interview so that the people who are listening to this interview can really get a taste of all that. Do you have
Hell yeah.
Other really great memories that were present in all of those different experiences you had?
I mean, just getting to hang out with Bill Kreutzmann and make music with him is a real, real blessing. He's just not even as a player, but just who he is somebody that is, you just immediately feel seen and accepted and loved when you're around him. He just exudes this, he's just really generous of spirit and really generous with his attention. And, you know, I'm kind of a weird player. Like I've never had a normal style, and, you know, a lot of sort of jam band music I came to very late. Like, not until I was in my 30s, and I'd already been playing for 20 years. And so by that time, I already had a lot of traits that are considered weird by most jam rock musicians. And I've been in so many situations over the years where I would get, not necessarily judged, but just, like, I could tell that I was different enough from what they were expecting that it kind of made their guard go up, the other players. And, like, it made them uncertain about who they were because I was so different than who they expected. And it just kind of upset the whole apple cart as far as the role playing in a classic rock style band. You know, I just didn't play by the normal script.
Yeah.
And I've just kind of over the years got a little numb to that, like a little calloused, where I just sort of expected people to be like, whoa, he's weird. And sometimes they thought it was like about them, but you know, but with Bill Kreutzmann, every single, from the first time I met him and played with him, when I didn't realize he was the Grateful Dead drummer, I was just like, this guy gets me. And this guy is fine with who I am. In fact, he celebrates what's unique about me. Which, you know, I mean, everybody says that they do that. You know, you would never be like, do you want other people to be unique or do you want them to be conformist? And no one's going to be like, I like conformist musicians. Everyone's going to answer, I want people to be unique and express themselves. But when it actually comes down to it, most people don't want that. In my experience, you know, most people kind of resent it if you show up and you're too far towards the unique end of the spectrum, but not Kreutzmann. He just, from the first day, I just felt really loved and acceptable, even with my weirdness and non-traditional role playing. So that's just been amazing, just to feel that somebody that who's had a career that big, you know, who doesn't need me, he doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, he could have any musician in the world play with him. And the fact that he not only chooses me, but then like celebrates what's unique about me is just almost too beautiful to comprehend. I'm just so lucky that I've gotten to know with him and gotten to play with him.
Wow. Well, yeah. This segment of my show is called the Live Your Masterpiece segment. And it sounds to me like you are definitely living your masterpiece. You're very genuine to it.
I hope so. I mean, the one other thing I would like suggest is that I made a documentary during the pandemic about my original band, Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey, which I did for 15 years. And we played all over the world and had this whole, like, more adventures than most musicians have in a whole lifetime. And that was like a lifetime ago at this point. But I just, during the pandemic, I just wanted to get some closure from that experience. And so I like went through the whole archive and I put together this, like, not even that long. It's less than 30 minutes long, but it's on YouTube and it's called Winterwood, A Jacob Fred Story. And I highly recommend that you check it out. If you like inspiring underdog art stories.
Love that. No, that's right up my alley, actually. And I was wondering, nice. That was the next thing on my list was projects that you've got coming up, because you said that you kind of keep it tight today. So I wanted to make sure that I got to, you know, throw it out there what you would like the listeners to know and what projects you've got going on right now.
Well, I got really focused during the quarantine because I, right before the COVID thing kind of blew up and everything got canceled and the lockdown happened, right before all that happened, I decided to give up alcohol. And right after that, I decided to give up cigarettes and nicotine. And so, and then the pandemic happened and I was like, oh, well, okay, I guess we're doing this, you know? And so I not only was home for the first time in 25 years, but I wasn't doing any of the things I usually do to pass the time. So I just got really focused on these projects. So I put together, in addition to the documentary about Jacob Fred, I put together 6 albums of old material, archive material that are live stuff that our old sound guy recorded, and just some stuff for the fans of that band. But then I also finished up and released a solo album called The Ladder that is songs about when someone very close to me ended up on the wrong end of the drug war and was sent to prison, a super gentle soul sent to a crazy intense prison for years. And so I wrote a bunch of songs about all the weirdness surrounding that.
Wow.
And as dark as that sounds, the songs are actually beautiful, and I'm really proud of them.
No, I'm looking forward to hearing them.
And then I made 2 Electric Beethoven albums that are coming out. One of them's an EP. It's, like, pretty short. And the other one is a full album. And those are both done, and I'm just kind of figuring out this great record label in Colorado, Color Red, is going to be putting them out, and it's sort of up to them at this point. But those are coming out. And then I just started a recording project this week, and I can't even talk about it yet, but it's so exciting, and I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned the Color Red, too, because we lived in Breckenridge for 9 years So we were able to get into Red Rocks a few times, and I was wondering about the color red and the record label there.
Oh man, so cool. It's the coolest like record label thing I've ever been involved in. I mean, not only is Eddie Roberts the president and founder, like one of my favorite guitarists, but he's just an inspiring guy, you know, like older brother type of figure who just like, you know, he's out of all the talented musicians I know, he's like the best at adulting. He's like able to like run businesses and make money and do all this stuff that is beyond me. So I'm honored because of that. But then they have this house in Denver, the Color Red House, where you can stay when you're playing in Denver. But then there's a whole recording studio in the basement that is a, you know, tape studio. It's not a digital studio. So you record to tape.
Ooh.
And you record with all the musicians in the same room. It's like the Motown studio was in the 60s.
Love it.
And that's where we've recorded all the Electric Beethoven stuff. And it's just this magical place where, I don't know, I don't even know how to describe it, but just a magical thing. It's such a cool team. I'm so glad that Electric Beethoven is part of it.
Well, next time I get to Denver, I'm going to have to look up the Color Red and see if they'll have me come visit.
Oh, yeah. You should interview Eddie. He's the coolest. Oh,
maybe I could do that. Yeah. We'll get it. His people will talk to my people. I mean, my people will talk to his people.
So you have two assignments from me. One is my version of Moonlight Sonata. Play that for your son. And the other one is to check out the Jacob Fred Winterwood documentary.
I am writing that. So I'd like to ask people who are on Live Your Masterpiece, the idea is to be inspired and inspire others. What brings you joy? What brings you the most joy, Reed?
What brings me the most joy? It's a good question. I would say what brings me the most joy is doing something musical that I'm afraid to do and having nothing bad happen. You know, and to a certain extent that's every note, but just like when, you know, taking a risk and having not only having nothing bad happen but having other people relate to it and have a sense of like that we have a shared human experience of whatever that feeling is, like, you know, that's just that's the highest honor there is as an artist, you know, to just that feeling of like, I'm not the only one, you know, like when you hear a musician and you're like, oh, like you can tell from their voice that they are experiencing something in the world that you experience and you don't know how to articulate it. And maybe you don't even know anybody else that feels that way. But then you hear John Lennon's voice or something and you're like, oh my God. Him too, you know.
Yeah, him too.
And then you realize not only are you not alone, you're actually maybe cool.
Oh, I love that.
That's the best.
Well, I once interviewed Bobby Seals from the Black Panthers, and I asked him that question, and he said, "Well, make him love to my wife, of course."
Wow.
Make him love to my wife too. Yeah. That was his answer. I just thought I would throw that out for you.
He sounds like a lucky man.
He was. He was a lucky man. And he still is.
Nice.
And so we're coming up on like 36 minutes past the time we've been on the phone. I just want to ask you, how can people find you? And where? What else would you like to leave the listeners with today?
I have an old website that was built by my ex-girlfriend who I don't speak to anymore. and I can't access it, but I started building a new website just myself, but I haven't finished it and it's not online yet. So I'm woefully unprofessional in that way. So I mean, the most reliable thing that I do these days is Instagram.
Me too.
So tell people to find me on Instagram.
Gotcha. I'm making notes right now.
And, you know, I would tell people to check out, you know, Billy and the Kids at Red Rocks with Billy Strings. And I would tell people to check out the Winterwood Jacob Fred documentary and, you know, my album, The Ladder, and all the various Beethoven albums. And I don't know, God, I've been doing this so long, I have a gazillion things I'm proud of. So I don't even know. I'm probably the wrong person to ask.
Yeah, I spent most of my day looking up who you were and what you've done and listening to interviews just so that I had some foresight into just who you are without sounding trite and asking the same questions that you've been asked.
Right. Well, I so much appreciate that. That's wonderful. Thanks, Holly.
You're welcome. Well, thank you. And I'm going to let you get back to whatever project you're working on. And
thank you.
But otherwise, Reed Mathis, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. I will let Ben Morrison from Brothers Comatose know that you said hey back. And I appreciate the fact that Hal Gill connected us. And I would be available anytime if you have further projects that you'd like to talk about here on the radio.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Holly. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you. I hope you have a fabulous Thursday. And we'll talk with you soon.
Okay. Bye. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to a pre-recorded interview with Reed Mathis and myself, Holly Lorien Adams, recorded on August 25th of 2021. Any views or opinions expressed are solely that of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent KSKQ. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in anytime, 89.5 FM in Ashland, Oregon, 94.1 FM in Medford, and online at kskq.org. Thank you again to Reed Mathis for being a guest on our show.